Welcome to the Unshakable Influence Podcast. On this podcast, we discuss anything and everything related to leadership in today's volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous world, aka VUCA world. I'm your host, Daniel Kimball, the CEO of Resonance Executive Coaching. And through a series of guest co-hosts, interviews, and solo episodes, this podcast will help you learn how to lead and thrive in the VUCA world of the 21st century. Today, I'm really excited and grateful to have Dan Fantasia join us for a conversation. He is the CEO and founder of Treeline. Welcome to the show, Dan. If you wouldn't mind just kind of introducing yourself and your company, that would be great.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Daniel. So the company's name is Treeline Incorporated. We're headquartered out of Boston, Massachusetts. We've been in business for 21 years, actually coming on 22 years, and we are a search firm. We specialize specifically and solely in the recruitment of sales executives, sales representatives for growing, basically growing companies across the United States. We've won numerous awards, best places to work, best executive search firms. I mean, we've won all kinds of awards, basically Inc. 5,000 fastest growing companies. But most of our success has been around our ability to help our clients find top talent and help our candidates find really good companies that they can sustain a happy, healthy career.
Yeah, thanks for that intro. I appreciate that. And you've had a lot of accolades, as you described, and that's why you got onto our radar as far as inviting you to be on the podcast. And something about, you know, the stereotypical view, if you will, of the services you provide is sort of can be overly transactional and just about placing somebody at all costs, if you will. That's sort of the stereotype that at least some people have in their minds. I know you have a different approach. So talk to me about that. What's different and unique about how Treeline solves this issue for clients?
Yeah, I mean, the good news is, I guess it's the same in any industry, right? There are lots of bad search firms out there. So it's really easy to stand out and above the rest,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so for us, you know, we're not just basically putting bodies in front of clients. We're genuinely trying to find a good match. And if we don't think it's a good match, we'll let the client and the candidate know so that we're not wasting everyone's time. I mean, there's nothing worse than disrupting someone's career, helping them find a new opportunity just to find out that it's not a great fit. And within 6 months, they're leaving. It just feels...
That's not good for the candidate or the company in the end to leave after that.
It's a horrible feeling.
Yeah.
It's a horrible feeling. So for other staffing firms or recruiting firms or search firms, maybe it's all about the revenue. For us, it's not. It's about changing lives. And by doing the right thing, we've built a really strong, solid following of very talented individuals.
Yeah. Talk to me about that. When you say do the right thing, can you elaborate on that? You give examples of making sure you're placing people properly, meaning it's a good match for the employee and the employer. What else do you do that kind of is, you know, would you describe as doing the right thing?
Well, I think I would say everything. it's one of our core values. And so at the top, I suppose leadership is doing the right thing when no one's looking, right? There's all kinds of temptations. And if growth and revenue and profit become your greatest priority, the most important priority, the people that you work with, that you find new opportunities for, that you help hire, they all suffer. And over time, while you may feel good presently to hit, you know, revenue goals or profit targets, it's not healthy for the company, for your clients, and for you. In the end, it just doesn't work out. So doing the right thing for us is everything. It's personal in your personal life. It's in your professional life. I don't want to carry any guilt ever. I don't. And by the way, by not carrying guilt, you can lead a really positive, happy life.
Yeah, because you feel good about everything you're doing, including work and life and always. Like if you're doing that and living in integrity, you can sleep well at night and have a much more peaceful life, I would say.
Yeah, 100%.
How would you describe your true north as a leader? And by that, I mean, like, what are your key values as a leader? And then how does that show up, you know, day in and day out as far as how you lead the company?
True north, again, is it is consistent with what we just discussed. It is It's about doing the right thing. I think it gets so easy for companies not to do the right thing. For example, when I left the company I was at before I started Treeline, I loved the organization. I loved the executive team. I left for many reasons, but when I left, I had a 1-year non-compete and I honored that for over 2 years. I knew I was taking the risk. I was going for it. You know, if I failed, it was on me. And if I succeeded again, it was on me, but I was not going to directly compete with my, or break my non-compete and directly compete with my past employer.
Right.
And so things like that, it's just, and we just believe in just always doing the right thing.
And how does that translate into your company culture? Because I imagine that it has a big influence on how the company culture feels and looks and what the behaviors are, et cetera. How does that translate?
You know, when we first started Treeline, company culture was always pretty much the number one. It was basically the number one reason why I started the company. But it is so critical to have a foundation. And early on, it was just about doing the right thing, hiring great people and building a really solid organization and a healthy, happy kind of work environment, which it has been. It has been like that for 20 years. It's awesome. We've won numerous Best Places to Work awards. But as we've matured, we've really isolated and identified, a couple of basically four core values. And by understanding our core values, it helps us to define the culture. And more importantly, it helps us to recruit the right individuals for our culture. Because if we understand what our core values are and the people that we hire share those same core values, then you build a lot of synergies. And once they walk in the door, they realize it's a wonderful match. It's better than what we discussed or talked about through the interview process. And they become believers and they're dedicated and we work with a purpose.
Right.
And so it's critical.
Yeah. When someone feels as connected as possible to the company, the mission, the culture, they really care about the people, about the success of everyone, everyone enjoys as the company is more successful and they're more likely to give up their discretionary time and really, go the extra mile, if you will, because they care about it so much. It's not just a paycheck at that point.
Yeah. We're, at Treeline, and this has happened for 21 years, every employee is in it for the right reasons, right? We don't oversell our opportunity. We're crystal clear on who we are, our beliefs, and what we're trying to accomplish. And so we're all working toward the same goal. We communicate very well, a lot of open dialogue, and it works. It just works, Daniel.
What are those four core values of the culture?
So one is grit, because we happen to work, as you know, in a challenging industry. So you need to have grit. You need to be able to compete to win. And that doesn't necessarily mean with the office, but that means at least with yourself, you have urgency and you're challenging yourself and you're trying to beat your metrics and you're trying to become a better, more talented professional.
Yeah. Be a better version of yourself than you were yesterday is what I'm
hearing. Yes, that's right. Yeah, exactly. Empowerment. It is so crucial that you empower yourself, that you take charge of your own career and the direction in which you want to make it go, right? There's no victims at Treeline. It's a wonderful environment to find success. But you need to be empowered to do so. And then lastly, we talked about this, is doing the right thing.
Talk to me a little bit more about empowerment. That can mean a lot of things. But you talked about sort of agency. And what I also heard kind of reading between the lines is being proactive and having initiative. So is that part of what you mean when you talk about empowerment?
Yes. Yeah. And in order to be empowered, you need to feel comfortable making mistakes.
Yeah.
And so that means that from the executive level down, you encourage people to make mistakes because it's the only way the company moves forward. And if every time you make a mistake, you feel foolish, you're never going to want to share new ideas,
right?
Or you're never going to want to
Your risk tolerance goes way down when you feel like you're being punished in some way for making a mistake, right?
Yeah. And the best way to encourage that is to just make a ton of mistakes yourself, right?
Yeah. And be open about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the more mistakes I make, the better, because the team feels so much more comfortable and they feel much more comfortable talking about ideas and challenges within the organization and things that need to be changed, right? No one's scared to voice their opinion, and we want to hear all the ideas because that's the way that we continue to evolve and change and move and grow.
Yeah, I appreciate that point, because I think pretty much almost any leader would say words to the effect of, I want to empower my people. I believe in empowerment. Then it comes down to, what do you actually do day in and day out? What behaviors do you reinforce in a positive way or reinforce in a negative way? Either way, that actually speak to and encourage people to take the risks, because with empowerment comes, you know, fewer guardrails, less guidance, and more, as a result, more likelihood of mistakes being made. However, they learn from those mistakes because they made the mistake themselves. They took ownership from the beginning of making that decision. They made a mistake that didn't go the way they thought it was going to go. Now they learn from it and they'll do a better job next time. Whereas if the leader kind of steps in and tells them what to do, you're taking that decision away from them, and also holding the decisions close to yourself, not intentionally typically, but the decisions end up getting pushed too high in the organization if you're not truly empowering people.
Yeah. I also think sometimes leaders, you know, I don't know if it's, I'm not saying it's ego, but they're afraid to make mistakes themselves, or they're afraid to have the rest of the organization see them make mistakes. I think the faster you make mistakes, the more mistakes you make, the more human you are, the more the company shares and understands, you know, the creativity and challenges, creativity really needed to grow an organization and to change.
Right. And the reality is, you know, most tasks, most projects, most initiatives, you know, something like 80% good enough is good enough and is better, is more effective to actually move on than it is to try to get it perfect. Some things it calls for, like really going that extra mile, getting it to like 99%. But in most cases, it's more effective, more efficient to go out of the roughly 80% level and move on to the next thing. And if you're worried about, you know, you tend to be more perfectionistic, you're worried about looking bad when you make a mistake. And so you'll probably spend too much time trying to make it, you know, 95% when 80% would have been enough.
Right. It's right? So true. Yeah.
And if you do that again and again over a series of projects, that adds up to a ton of wasted energy on everyone's part. Yeah. Not to mention the innovation that doesn't happen because people, again, aren't taking the risks. And of course, the goal is not to have mistakes happening all the time. The goal is to empower people to make their own decisions and take responsibility and learn from their mistakes and continue to get better.
Yeah.
As you said before, you know, be a better version of yourself today than you were yesterday.
Yeah. It's spot on.
Another question I had, you mentioned earlier that, you know, company culture was probably the number one reason why you started this company. I wanted to circle back to that. Why was that a motivating factor for you to start this company?
Well, the company I was at before, we had an awesome culture, but as it grew, it became, you know, it changed. And while I was the number one rep, I was the youngest promotion to managing partner. I had no turnover on my team. I had great success. So it was a shock when I left, of course, but the rest of the organization was changing. The culture was failing. It was becoming very cutthroat, and we were losing our identity. And so for me, I had to leave because I've always believed in doing the right thing. I had to leave because it was changing. It was becoming that company that was just placing people to place people.
Yeah.
And of course, in time, you know, that's why the company's no longer around.
Okay. Yeah. You started this company just over 20 years ago, I think. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yep. Almost.
Talk to me. I'm curious about the growth. So you started, I imagine, just with yourself or a small handful of people. And where are you at today? And what were kind of the growing pains along the way?
Yeah, so we started, you're right. I started by myself in an office. I showed up every day with a suit and tie. I didn't have a website, but I built one pretty quickly, which was not great.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I just got married. We just bought a home. So there were a lot of things going on.
Yeah.
There was a lot going on, and the idea was to try to build this company and make it happen. I believed in myself, and I knew I could make it. I knew I could get it done. But don't forget, I started in March of 2001. 6 months later was September 11th. And right. So in those 6 months, I was just trying to get moving. We were calling on pharmaceutical firms, which is really hard to get your foot in the door into large corporations like that. But we did. And then, 4 months in, I hired my first employee. Basically, I signed every client and all the revenue driven basically went to that new employee. Right. And then slowly we grew. Every placement I made, instead of taking the commission, I was paying for, rent and phones and salaries and, everything else. But little by little, we grew. We continue to grow. Today, right now we're just under 20 employees.
Okay.
We have plans to hire 9 folks next year. So we have we continue to grow at a pretty solid pace.
Yeah. And along the way, what have you done or what have you felt was needed? And what have you learned about kind of keeping the culture growing the direction you want it to go as the company continues to grow? You're bringing more people. Every new person has their own influence on the culture. So how do you keep it going in the direction you want it to go as far as that, as far as growing through the growth with the people?
Love that question. Because you're right. Over 21 years, we've had lots of great people come into the organization, and a lot of people have been recruited out of our firm.
Yeah.
Right. It does happen. It happens to all of us. And to sustain growth over 20 years is challenging because of the downturns. 2008, 2009, 2010 yeah. was sluggish. I mean, we had just doubled our space, and again, we were tearing it up. But then, of course, the market crashed. So those were some tough years. And so we grew again, and then we hit COVID, which was not nearly as challenging as 2008. I mean, those were tough years, yeah. Mostly because the financial collapse made it very challenging, not necessarily to help companies grow. It was challenging to collect, believe it or not, bring money in. That was the biggest challenge then. COVID was interesting, but it gave us the ability to pivot and change and become a 100% virtual company. So we're headquartered in Boston, but we have employees across the United States. So that was wonderful. We've had wonderful, great years, and right now we're incredibly busy. I don't know what 2023 is going to bring. Maybe there'll be another blip in the down. Maybe there'll be another little bit of a downturn. But for right now, we're feeling very confident and really good going into 2023.
Yeah, I'm curious about that. Today's December 7th. This will probably publish, maybe sometime in January. But to get some insight, it's a lot of talk about. Recession that might be coming, a lot of headlines and all kinds of columns and opinions out there. And in some ways that's starting to happen, but in many ways it isn't. There's a lot of positive news as far as the economy goes, but there's a lot of concern about what's it going to look like in 23 and beyond. And you and your firm and what you do, in some ways you have some leading indicators. So what's your insight into that? What are you seeing so far as potentials? Are you seeing any slowdowns at all as far as hiring goes?
December is slow.
Typically,
and it's just because everything drags out. People are on vacation. People are distracted. Folks are finishing the year. It all happens. Actually, December's slow, and January 1st, you don't just flip a switch and it turn on and go crazy. Right. It's usually like January 15th, like 2 weeks into January is when companies start getting aggressive because now they've done their kickoff meetings. They're looking to see where they finished 2022. They're getting aggressive. They're looking at top grading, or they're trying to assess their sales team or maybe even their executive team, and they're ready to go. So typically right around mid-January, and that's what we have. We have a lot of clients right now saying we're pausing or we're going to finish up with this hire. And then, but in January, we want to, we've got 8 people we want to hire or 9, so it's going to be, I think Q1 is going to be aggressive. Based on the conversations we're having, but who knows? Maybe we'll have a slow Q1, I don't anticipate it, but it could happen.
So it sounds like, you know, other than the normal slowdown this time of year, as far as hiring goes, you're not, at least at this juncture, not seeing any signs that things are slowing down hiring wise.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in July, companies were worried then too. And we had a slowdown in July, but that was because it was July.
Right.
We
had summertime is another slowdown period.
It's right? another slow. Right. And, but you know what? August and September were gigantic. So we had a huge successful Q3. You know, so October, November have been great. It is a little bit slow right now because of the holidays, which is traditional.
Yeah.
And then Q1, we're usually overwhelmed in Q1.
Yeah.
So I think that will happen this year as well.
Okay. That makes sense. Thanks for that insight. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I'm curious, we talked in our prep conversation a few weeks ago about some different things. One of them was about sort of continuous improvement. So talk to me about that. What are you doing within the company? What have you done over the years to help the company and the individuals and everything else improve step by step?
Yeah. So from a company perspective, we do something called stop, start, keeps. And that is when basically quarterly, I'll send out an email and I'll ask for the employees to write down what they think we need to start doing, stop doing, and keep doing.
Yeah.
And that creates a lot of buzz, which is great. And we basically, in our quarterly meeting, monthly meetings, we go through all of the suggestions. And then as a team, we discuss them. And we all like them or we don't like them. They're good ideas or bad ideas. It helps us to continue to move. We move forward. You know, we're an executive search firm. We also have, we've also developed software. We started developing software in 2007. We just relaunched our software application, which, I mean, it reduces the time that companies need to find top talent. It manages the process, the workflow. It gives them structure. It's amazing. And yeah. Our clients will tell you that. But there is no other firm that is in our space that has developed software to make sure or to help our clients or their clients make the hiring process easier, right? That's on our dime. We don't charge for it. They get to use the software and it's lights out. It is really, really excellent. We would never have been able to develop that and continue to develop that and add new releases without the constant brainstorming of the entire team.
Yeah. And it sounds like you're not just asking the questions of, you know, what do you want to start, stop, keep, but you're taking action on it and a team is talking about it and you get a chance to even deep dive into these ideas of what do you want to start, stop, and keep and come to some level of consensus about how you're going to change things going forward. Of course, asking the question is just the first step. I think it's what I say to clients is that if you ask the question and then don't take obvious action on the answers, then that's worse than not asking the question in the first place, because there's an implicit assumption that by asking the question, you're going to do something productive with the information. And sounds like you're absolutely doing that.
Well, you know, so this is the start, stop, keeps are awesome. But again, empowerment. If you have a wonderful idea and we all agree it's a great idea, then we will help you and hold you accountable to help execute that that idea. Right. It doesn't always have to be the executive team or the CEO. It could be a variety of different individuals that work to achieve these goals. So after you go through all these ideas, then what you do is you basically figure out what changes are going to be made and then who is going to make those changes, right? It doesn't just roll up to the right. CEO and now all of a right. sudden you have all these ideas that the team had that you have to, you know, implement. That's yeah. that defeats the
idea.
The
I like to say the idea is some ideas are great, but the idea is actually the easier part. Making it happen is the harder part.
Right. Yeah. Right. So you don't want to go down a rabbit hole and think of this great idea. And the ideas are everything. The ideas on how the meeting should be held. Maybe it's on a happy hour. Maybe it's, you know, there's all kinds of ideas. Some of them are fun, right? But when you come up with an idea, you need people to volunteer to implement and, right. execute. It's not like all these ideas are the CEO's now responsibility and you've got, you've got to be in charge of doing them all. So, and if no one wants to step up, then the idea is really, the suggestion's not that important. It's not that important to the
company. If it was urgent enough, somebody would make the time to do it, right?
Yes, exactly right.
So. Yeah. Thanks for that. I appreciate that. What do you do for yourself as far as keeping yourself at the top of your game and helping yourself be a better version of yourself today than you were yesterday? Like, what works for you?
Just a couple of things. I'm obviously a big skier, but I can't ski all the time. So I working out for me every morning. I'm up. I stretch and I work out every day. Well, except weekends, but I basically, well, even then I'm doing something, but I'm just active. So working out and, believe it or not, projects, like, it doesn't have to be a huge project, but any kind of project, fixing things, anything, is helpful for me. And I'll tell you why, because, in this job and a lot of jobs, I spend a lot of time on the phone in front of a computer, but I very rarely get to step back and we do change a lot of lives. We help people find and advance their careers. We help companies grow and it's wonderful. It's a wonderful feeling. It's great. But you can never stand back and say, all right, I'm going to paint this room. When you stand back and you're done painting the room, you feel a real sense of accomplishment, right? There's something physical that you can see in front of you. So for me, I'm kind of always on the go, but just projects like that, when I look back, it just makes me feel good. Like I've accomplished something that looked like this and now it looks like this.
Yeah, you know, it's like physically tangible is what I'm hearing.
Yeah. I don't know, Daniel, if you can help me explain that, but I just like to work on things and then feel proud and look back and say, wow, that came out great.
Yeah. And you're talking about projects on a personal level, not necessarily work stuff.
They're both. I feel good.
Yeah.
I mean, the companies, we're because we're always innovating and trying new things, there's always projects going on.
Right. Right. You're talking about personal projects that kind of help you recharge, rejuvenate, be your best self. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Exercise first, skiing, no question. But then projects, yeah.
Okay. I'm curious if you can share a little bit more about, you know, why did you decide to start a company? You could have gone and worked, I assume, for any number of other search firms and been an employee, maybe been a top performer, continued along that, you know, career advancement path on someone else's company. So why start a company versus taking that path?
Oh, the challenge. Maybe the same thing. Maybe I've never thought of it like this, but maybe because it was like a project. But I saw something broken. I just wanted to fix it. And in my mind, the only way to fix it was, you know, based on the ideas that were kind of running around in my head. And there was no other way to do that other than starting it myself. So and it was tough. I mean, it was really tough to get started. I mean, just about a year and a half after that, my wife was pregnant with our first child. And, you know, you're trying to support, you know, the employees, your household. There's a lot going on. A lot going on there. So, I like the challenge. I like the rush. I like the risk. I like the work. And I like building something that is really special to so many people. And it's many people. You had asked a question before, and I don't think I answered it correctly. It was a two-part question. I answered half of it. But one of the questions you asked was, how do you have, you know, over 21 years, we have 20 employees. So that means that people have come and gone.
Yeah.
And there is just we have a huge following of past Treeline employees. Right, that have been recruited by other firms or not even other firms. Actually, the way we lose most of our employees is through our customers. We work in sales. We help our clients hire. They build a wonderful relationship with a person here at Treeline, and they say, wow, you would be great here at our company. Right. Why not come and join our firm?
Yeah.
So that is, unfortunately, our one of our biggest downfalls is we do such a great job with our employees. We hire really good people and we lose them to our customers. But
what's a double-edged sword? And it's a good problem to have because it means you're providing a great level of service. To me, in some ways, it's the ultimate compliment that they want to hire that person.
I know. It just makes it a lot tougher. Yeah, it's harder. We've got a good training program. We're great at coaching people up. We've got the pieces, but that is one of our bigger challenges.
Yeah. So if you could take, you know, everything you've learned about leadership and entrepreneurship along the road and you do your best to distill it down to just one key thing you want to leave the listeners with, what would that one key piece of advice be?
You're going to think this is crazy. Be happy. Because you're, if you're happy, if you're going to build a dynamic, fun, happy place to work, you yourself need to be happy. If you are a executive that's always miserable, totally stressed out, and you can't see or appreciate the actual joy in building a company or growing a company, it might not be, maybe you're doing it for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
But if you truly want to grow yourself and enjoy what you do, then you should like all of the pieces of growing a company, hiring employees, coaching employees, knowing that your fiscal and financial responsibilities. I mean, all of it should feel like something that you love to do. And if you don't love to do it, and it makes you miserable and you're an unhappy CEO, that means that your company and culture is going to be unhappy and miserable too. And while it may pay the bills, is it really how you want to live your life?
Yeah. And it's all going to start with you. The tone of the company is going to start with the CEO. So if you're stressed out all the time, that's the tone that you're setting for the organization. And, you know, everybody has stress, but it's a matter of you're choosing how you show up day in and day out. And to your point, you know, doing your best to be happy with all the work, even the pieces that maybe you're not crazy about doing, but it has to get done, or you delegate it properly, whatever it takes. But the energy you put out as the CEO and founders is going to model for everybody else what the culture is going to feel like.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of tough jobs out there. I mean, it's work. So you can either choose to make it fun and be happy, or you can choose to be miserable. I just choose, it's just a choice. I just choose to be happy. Yeah. Make it fun. What the heck? Why can't you work hard? And why can't you have both? You can work hard and be happy and have fun. You can do both.
That's a really good point. I mean, there's this kind of implicit assumption that many of us can fall into of thinking hard work and fun are the opposite of each other, but actually they can go hand in hand very much so.
Oh yeah. And your success actually goes up.
Right. Because you're enjoying what you do, right?
Yeah. And by the way, you will burn out. You know, if you go to the, if you eat the same exact food every day, you're going to burn out. You're going to get sick of that food. Well, you go to work every single day. There are going to be times when you burn out. I burn out. You would be foolish to think you're not. So how do you change? What do you change to make sure you don't burn out? How do you make it fun? What do you need to think of? What creatively do you need to do just as an individual to make sure that you're having fun? You know, that's the purpose.
And if you as the founder and CEO are getting, you know, burned out, it may be a signal that there's more stuff the company needs to be doing as a whole, because maybe there's a little bit too rote at that point. You always want to be growing and advancing, not just yourself as a leader, but the entire organization. It may be a sign, not necessarily, but it may be a sign that the organization needs to take on some new territory, something more interesting, and expand in some way.
Yeah. I mean, it's all perspective. As executives, we all have our challenges and we have our highs and lows. But you, without a positive attitude, grit, right?
Yeah.
A positive attitude and the grit to get through it. It's hard to sustain a positive culture and company.
Yeah. And it's going to lead you to burnout too, which is going to set that tone for the whole company.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Thanks for the time today. I appreciate it. People want to find you or find Treeline or learn more, where can they go to find you and find the company?
Well, you can go to our website, which is treelineinc.com. You can call me or email me or connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm happy to talk with anyone. I'm happy to share advice, my opinion. I don't know if it would be accepted, but yeah, I'd say our website for certain, and then feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn or call the company's fine too.
Great. Again, thanks for your time today. I really appreciate the conversation.
Yeah, thank you, Daniel. This has been great. Really good.
I want to thank you for listening to today's episode. If you like what you heard, I invite you to connect with me on LinkedIn. Again, I'm Daniel Kimble, K-I-M-B-L-E. Go ahead and connect with me on LinkedIn if you want to. And be sure to subscribe to this podcast so that you will get notified each time a new episode is published. And finally, if you think this episode might be useful to others in your network, please do go ahead and share it with them. Until next time, this is Daniel Kimble signing off.